Yo, Brokey, what's happening? Brokey.
All right, how are you?
I'm doing just good. Right, I'm doing
Easter.
Great.
Happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter. We had Passover over here as well in the Warner household, so it was a nice nice weekend. A lot of food going on and everything like that. So,
oh, my God.
I mean,
so did we.
Yeah, Friday night, Toby had she put on the whole thing. There's like probably, I think, 10 or 12 people that were over at their house. She cooked, and she over Passover, she does like this huge dinner every year, and it's always fantastic. I mean, the roast beef just kind of like, it's not roast beef, is it? Yeah, it's roast, and it just like melts in your mouth, and she does like a bunch of different Jewish foods, kugel, and there was...
The challah.
No, not with Passover. So Passover, they're not allowed any what they call chametz, which is like bread or anything like that. So you don't do no challah for Passover. But there's a whole bunch of other things that they do. And my favorite thing about Passover is my favorite food at Passover is this matzah. To give you an idea of what matzah is, it's like a cracker. Generally speaking, matzah as itself is very, very dry, but she adds like a caramel and chocolate glaze over the top of this matzah and puts, sprinkles nuts on it, like pecans and things like that. Oh my goodness. I cannot explain how amazing this stuff is. It is fantastic.
Well, what's the matzah part of it?
Matzah, it's like a cracker. It's unleavened bread, so it doesn't have any yeast or anything like that. So it doesn't actually rise.
Okay, so it's different from the challah bread type thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Challah is like an actual loaf of bread. The matzah is more of a cracker. Like, literally, it's you would compare it to a cracker. Like if you were to eat some like Ritz or not Ritz, what are those? What are the normal white crackers? The white box with blue on it. What do they call them? Why is my, it's not Ritz. It's a, saltine crackers. What the heck is my brain doing? Saltine. It'd be very similar to
like. We've been eating them since we've been kids, right?
It'd be very similar to a saltine cracker, but like much larger. Okay. They're probably, so a saltine cracker, what is like a 2-inch by 2-inch square? Matzah cracker is probably like a 4 or 5 inch by 5 inch square cracker. And so she sprinkles stuff all over it and crack it, you know, you crack it all up. And I mean, oh, it's so good. It's fantastic. And just in general, I mean, Toby's a fantastic cook. So dinner was great there. So there's multiple nights of Passover, and we had a friend of ours who invited us over for dinner as well, and we had Passover over there, and there was a whole bunch of other people there, and their food was delicious as well. They had some beef. There was, what else was there? I mean, there was just all kinds of stuff, and it's really kind of one of those holidays where you eat tons of food. It's like you feel like that's all you do the entire weekend. But it's a good time. So what did you guys do anything for Easter?
Yes, we did. Waking up in the morning, had some breakfast, a big breakfast that the wife made, corned beef hash. Have you ever had that?
I'm sure
you have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, love that. Eggs, sausage, toast, and, you know, start your morning off with the breakfast and coffee, and then, went into to luncheon. And then for the dinner, oh my gosh, we went over to your sister's boss's house, and he lives over in the Seaford area and lives in, I forget the road that it's called, but anyways, he lives in a nice house on an island. It's a house on its own island.
Mm-hmm.
For Easter. To do an Easter egg hunt, and I thought that was really nice of him.
Yeah.
And he cooked out, and I think what I'm gonna do, I've cooked on a gas grill for so many years now.
Yeah.
And he cooked out on a charcoal grill, cooked chicken, burgers. We had beans, we had mashed potatoes, we had pasta salad, but the flavoring on the charcoal grill is something that I've missed.
Yeah.
The gas grill is so much easier. Oh, you know, you turn that little thing, you go, and it starts to grill up and everything. You know, the charcoal grill is just a little bit more time, you know, consuming, where you got to do all that. But the flavor of the food is just so much better.
Was he doing the briskets, like the ones that have like the fuel already in them, or was it charcoal, like actual?
Just regular charcoal, and okay. Then you pour the fluid on it, and then after you soak it, light it, let it sit for about, I don't know, probably about 15 yeah. to 20 minutes.
Let the fire go.
And then let the food go on there. But then while we were doing all that, we just sat around and talked, and, you know, just, he lives right on the water.
Yeah.
So the view.
Well, I would hope it'd be on the water. It's an island, right?
true this. So, and then, but before we ate, he had a Easter egg hunt. He has three kids, and we're talking like 90 eggs that he hid. And I helped hide some of the eggs, and then Ella helped hide some of the eggs, and so did he. And then there's this, at the end, after you find all the eggs, there's one big egg. I mean, it's huge that you can, if you held it, you would feel like a pregnant woman in front of your belly.
Was it an ostrich egg?
It was probably a little bit bigger than that, if not. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was the prized egg, and it had like $20 in it.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah.
Oh, so it was a fake. It was like a plastic egg, though. It wasn't like a.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was thinking. I was like, how did they get a $20 bill into a large egg like that? But yeah, okay, that makes sense. All right.
Yeah, and all the smaller eggs had candy, and they had a bunch of change in them.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
90 eggs with candy and change in them equals a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then the big egg had a $20 bill in it. So yeah, it ended up being a great day.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did Ella show you the picture of Charlotte?
Missing teeth?
Yeah.
Like a hockey player?
Yeah, she took both of her front teeth out, man. I'll tell you what, though.
Cool. Here's the thing.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to get as emotional as I did about it. Like, one of those things that, you know, you don't really understand until you have kids, and, you know, things like that kind of happen, and it just, like, especially because it's the first ones, it's not her first teeth that she's lost. She's actually lost other teeth, but I mean, it's like, you know, that main smile that you see, and you know, she lost
when they're missing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, her smile is still just as cute as it was before, but, and, you know, she's so happy about it and everything. But yeah, that was a big deal around here. You know, Lila, she was kind of upset about it, 'cause she hasn't lost her teeth or anything, but, yeah, it was a whole ordeal. But you know, so Charlotte last night, that's what she was working on. She was trying to get them out of there. She got one of them out, and the other one was kind of hanging on, and it was like, it was pretty, it kind of was attached to the gum a little bit, so I'm sure it hurt a little bit. And so I just took
Did you pull on it?
I got the second one I most of the way got out. And what I did was I got some floss and basically tied it around the tooth.
Put it behind the tooth, yeah.
And just kind of cinched down on the knot and to kind of separate the gum from the tooth, which I know sounds disgusting, but it was the only way, because, I mean, it was like hanging, it was disgusting looking. Like, if we weren't going to pull it out, it was going to be horrible. So I was just like, I'm just going to do it, and I just kind of cinched down on it, and eventually it got up underneath of there and separated the flesh of the gum away from the tooth and came out. So it was... We just knocked out both of them at one time. They've been wiggly and ready to go. So, but the other thing was that Lila earlier this week she wrote this story for school, and it was about a local restaurant or whatever, and she got to read it for the mayor of Mountain Brook, which is the area where we live at. And
I did see that on Facebook. Yeah, it was so cool.
It was really, really neat. And there was a whole bunch of people that you know, there was this thing with it wasn't like she was the centerpiece. There was like a whole bunch of school things going on, but it was really neat that she got to read it for the mayor and things like that. And he came out and he sat next to her and listened to her read her story. And yeah, she was really proud of herself. It was a really neat moment.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely very cool. But yeah, that was pretty much our weekend. Like I said, we got into the Passover, a lot of different foods and things like that. And then the teeth thing was just, it was a bigger deal than we wanted it to be. That's for sure.
Did the tooth fairy? Did the tooth fairy come by?
Oh yeah, of course. They only get $1. From the tooth fairy.
Yeah, hey.
Inflation.
Back in our days, it was 25 cents.
Yeah. Inflation really hasn't impacted the tooth fairy that much. I'm not assuming, because I think that's about what I got when I lost teeth as well. It was about $1. So
So
let's get into some of these news stories. I got a couple of really juicy ones that I think we're both going to agree on. I don't know that for sure because we didn't prep and like talk about what our opinions are or anything. But I feel like we're going to have very similar ideas about it. I could be surprised. But the first one here is the did you hear about the Odell Beckham Jr. rant against the Giants? He had this – I mean, there was this whole tweet storm where he was basically targeting Gettleman, who is in the New York Giants organization. And he was basically talking about the – I guess Gettleman had some – it was like an interview a couple months back when OBJ was still on the team, and he mentioned that he thought that one of the problems in the clubhouse was a little bit of the culture, and kind of insinuated that there was bad blood in the locker room. And I guess since he's left, the question has been asked again, and Gettleman was like, no, it's no longer a problem. Which, again, he didn't directly point out OBJ was the cancer in the locker room or whatever. And, OBJ was like, yeah, you can talk to my, my fellow teammates, and none of them, they'll all tell you, like, I'm not a cancer in the locker room, and, blah, 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 blah. And it, like, I get it. I think he's allowed to have the mentality that he does, and he justify some of the context, or I mean the antics that he says on and off the field. But I think ultimately for me, the big thing here was he was missing the point. Like, a clubhouse cancer doesn't mean that your teammates don't like you. What it means is that when you're upset or when you're exuding this toxic environment, it brings everybody else around you down. And then, the people around you are impacted by it. And he's a big personality. The things that he says, he's going to be that type of individual in the locker room where
he's underneath the microscope.
Yeah, absolutely. And his teammates probably think he's a great guy. He's out there and he's always going to be one to step up for us. He's always in the pocket. He's going to be, he's a man for the team. But when he goes out and he has these, he mouths off about stuff, or he says something bad about the organization and the public, those types of things that he's saying, those types of topics, those are going to spread throughout the locker room. And then you're going to have the other guys who now aren't going to trust the coach, who aren't going to, who aren't going to have the same respect for the coach. And even if they don't, if the team likes each other and they're out there playing for each other, they're not playing with the same level of intensity that they would be playing for otherwise. So I kind of wanted to get your opinion on that as well.
Well, one of the main things after this big tweet that came out between, Gettleman and Shermer and Beckham and everything, that I haven't heard anything from Manning. It's like he's stepping back. He's not going to say anything to start anything toward that, to where, I don't know, he doesn't want any attention toward that. All that's in the past. He's gone.
Right.
Manning's still there. And I'm thinking that the manager or the organization of the Giants are going to step up, and I'm hoping that they're going to step up and come in the draft, that they're going to improve on their team to prove that, you know what, we can move on without Beckham.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, they received their two first round pick, a third round pick, and also a strong safety in the trade for Beckham, which a lot of people gave them a little bit of criticism for the strong safety piece of that. Again, I've made the comment in the past, and I'll make it again. I think that they need to be focusing on their defense with the 2019 draft. Clearly, tomorrow, that's when everything's going to go down. We'll probably talk a little bit about it in next week's podcast. But I think that ultimately, and especially, we for sure will be talking about it next week if they trade their draft picks and decide to go, and then trade up to get a Haskins. Like, if that is what happens, again, I'm going to lose it. I just can't fathom them doing that. But again, I want to, you know, kind of accentuate that I want them to go heavy on the defense on this draft and make sure that they prepare themselves for the 2020 draft, because the 2020 draft is going to have some phenomenal offensive powerhouses coming into it. And so I think that I'm hoping that that's kind of the mentality, is that they're going to be focusing on and targeting the 2020 draft.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing here was, you know, ESPN had an article earlier today. They were talking about how the Giants should draft Haskins. And, you know, again, I'm not anti the Giants picking up Haskins if he drops to them in the, you know, the sixth pick in the first round, or if they can, I don't see it happening, but if he happens to fall to the number 17 overall, that would be fantastic. My thing is I don't want to see them throw away the number 17 pick in order to trade up to get Haskins. If he doesn't fall to them at the number six spot, I think that they need to focus on the defense. I think they need to look for some edge rushers. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
If he does drop to them and they pick him in at the number six overall, I'm not going to be, it won't be the worst thing. I mean, so the kid he's a New Jersey native, right? He's from the area. He grew up, I think him and his dad grew up as Giants fans. So that would be one of those, you know, once in a lifetime opportunities for the kid to go and play for the team he grew up loving. So that would be pretty cool as a storyline type deal. He is a prototypical quarterback at 6 foot. I think I said 6'3", 230, 231 pounds or something like that. So he's a good choice at the position. I just don't think he's as good as the crop of quarterbacks that are going to be available in 2020.
I think that's where he actually wants to go. Just like you said, that his dad wants him to go there too.
Right.
From being, you know, growing up around in that area and everything. He stated that, you know, he's a big fan of Eli Plaxico, and, you know, just what New York needs to do, the New York Giants need to do is, you know, you have a great quarterback in Eli. And I say a great quarterback, that's almost...
He's got two rings.
One of those.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
You can't spell elite without Eli.
Is he a Hall of Famer? I think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a great mentor, you know, for Haskins if he gets picked to go. And I think what New York has to do if they do draft him is get him the clipboard, just like the teams used to do in the NFL. Back in the days, give him a clipboard, whether it be 1 year and Eli's not doing that great during that year in the seventh or eighth game in the season, is hand the clipboard to Eli and switch it over and let Haskins grow.
Yeah.
I think within seven or eight games in the season, along with the preseason, that he's learned enough to where he's learned the system, and he can take it from there. If and I haven't heard what his, you know, what his learning procedures are in the rooms of watching film and in the workouts, and, you know, Does he really go all out on those type of things? You know, does he really want to? There's been players that come out. Michael Vick's even admitted that, you know, he wished that he really in the rooms. What's the word that I'm looking for?
In the film room.
In the film room. Thank you. In the film rooms where he really wasn't interested in learning the playbooks and watching films, that he tried to do it just on his natural ability.
Yeah.
And Haskins has great natural ability. So whether he takes it within his natural ability or learning the way the system's supposed to work and be successful is yet to be seen. So I'm hoping that they do pick him and they give him the clipboard, set him on the sideline, and then see where it goes from there if Eli doesn't have a good season.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about his discipline in the film room. I mean, he's coming from a storied, you know, storied organization in Ohio State. I mean, they're an elite college football program. You know, and you're not going to Ohio State and playing at that level with the coaching staff that they have over there, or had over there last year, rather. I know they're switching it up this year, without being the type of player who has the discipline to get into the film room and really watch, especially in the Big Ten where they play at. That's not a cupcake a cupcake league. They're real football players playing out of that area. So I'm not too concerned about whether or not he has the discipline to go and actually learn the system and play correctly. And again, like, you know, we said before, he's a fan of the team, so he's going to want to be the best that he could possibly be. So if that's what happens, fantastic. I just don't want to see him draft up for it. That would be our trade, yeah, to draft up for him. Switching gears a little bit here and moving on to some baseball. Harper ejected for yelling at the ump from the dugout, right? Did you see the video of him coming out of there?
I did.
He was on fire. I've seen him. I think he has been ejected from, I believe, 16 or 17 games over his career. And every single time he's been ejected, he is, I mean, just
12.
So he is just firecracker coming out of the dugout. My big one here is the kind of the way that he, you know, kind of presented himself coming out of the dugout like that. His when he got ejected, his coach was already on his way out there and was in front of the umpire giving him his mind, and his, you know, he had to push Harper out of the way to keep Harper from basically jeopardizing being, you know, suspended for more than just the game. Like, he was already kicked out of the game. It's a tough one, right? So Harper, he was called, he was called out looking at an earlier poor call, very similar call to the one that was called against his teammate. And when his teammate had it called, he started chirping from the dugout, and that was about all the umpire could have of it. Yeah, you know, sometimes it's tough with those kind of calls, because you see that all the time. You're going to get some language out of the dugouts, especially on calls that they feel like are poor or not in their favor. But, you know, you kind of have to just take it as it is and let it roll off your shoulder and just get back out there and play baseball. My big thing here, Harper is getting paid $145,000 per game, okay? And so he played through two at-bats, roughly four innings, which means that he played for about half the game. We'll give him benefit of the doubt and say he played for half the game, which means the team lost about $70,000 in production that evening, right? Should he have been thrown out? I don't know. I didn't really hear what was said. You know, in the end, you're going to get some calls, and sometimes you're not. The one thing that was somewhat telling to me was what was said by Jake Arrieta after the game. And he was like, you know,
and I agree. Yeah, yes.
We need him in right field. Like, I don't care how bad the ump is. I need him in right field. I need him at the plate, and he wasn't there. So that hurts. We missed some pitches, but for both sides, if that's the case, That happens on a nightly basis usually. The umpire is gonna and the umpire is gonna miss some calls. So what? Next pitch, we've got a game to play. And I 100% agree with this statement. The team that team paid $330 million to have him in right field and for his bat to be in the lineup. And yeah, it's one game and he's, you know, it's not the one game doesn't make or break a season, but at the end of the season, it certainly can make or break it if you're in a, you know, a real hot race towards the end and that you only have a couple game lead or you've got a couple games that you've got to make up. So,
but to, you know, say against that, that Harper also said that, you know, it was his fault and that he has to stay into the game for the fans, for the and for the team.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, from game one of opening season until they start playing in September and through October, hopefully if they make it that far, which, you know, if he keeps doing that, of course, the Phillies aren't going to make it that far. But what I don't agree with, Arrieta, is something like that on the post interviews after the game. Is you don't vent your frustrations to the reporters. You vent your frustrations to Harper, and let it known internally to say, just look, listen, you know. You're the man of the team.
Yeah.
This is what we brought you here for, to Philadelphia. We brought you here to get to the postseason, to make it to the World Series and bring one, two, or three, however many years that you're here, hopefully many World Series to come. But Arrieta vented his frustration to the reporters and to the world to say, you know, we need you out on the field. And I understand his frustration, but you tell Harper and the team in a meeting that's what needs to go on and not to the reporters.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they went on to lose that game, you know, so there's just so much that goes into that really should not have happened. And ultimately, it's, you know, to me, it kind of goes back into that mentality of occasionally you needed to shut up, you know, bite your tongue, get out there and, you know, get after that next pitch, get out there and hit that home run. And, you know, he didn't get that opportunity. So, you know, it's
a long season, you know, 162 games, you know, it's going to happen. You're going to see many of those calls throughout the season. You just got to keep your cool, go to the next pitch. And I agree just what Arrieta was saying. He, as a pitcher, throws those pitches.
Yeah, and no, he gets
them, and he don't get them.
Yeah.
And he gets frustrated on, you know, on the mound. And, you know, he as a starting pitcher, can't argue with the refs to say, you know what, that was a strike, you know, whether it was borderline or way out of the way, you know, of the strike zone. He can't argue those calls. Once again, baseball rules, you can't argue balls and strikes.
Yeah.
That's the name of the game. If you do, they're going to look at you and they'll probably warn you. And then after they warn you, just like Harper, you know, happened with Harper, you're gone out of the game. And he got ejected early in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty much, like I said, a little bit before halfway mark of the game. So, but yeah, you know, I like the passion. I do. But at some point, you're just going to look like a jerk. And that's kind of how he came off on that one.
Yeah.
On a much happier note in baseball, Arenado, 1,000th hit. And it just happened to be a long shot home run that a fan in the stands ended up catching. And, you know, he really didn't, you know, Arenado wasn't too big on the milestone itself. He's just out there to play baseball, which, again, every time I hear a news story about this guy, I can't help myself but love him more and more as a baseball player. He's fantastic.
I think that's your guy for some reason this year.
What's that?
I said, I think that's your guy this year. I think you're high
Oh, yeah.
High hopes for that because he signed a big contract. He's not with the greatest team in the world, but I think you're looking for him to do great this year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of the funny things was they ended up tracking down the fan who caught the home run ball, and they negotiated with him and ended up they were able to secure getting a get the ball back by giving him – it was – what, two autographs? It was Trevor Story and Charlie Blackman. They gave him two autographed balls from those two players. I don't know why he didn't get an Arenado ball signed to give it back. Again, maybe he already has one. I'm not sure. But one thing I wanted to do is I wanted to ask you, like, if you found yourself in that situation, all right? Maybe it's not Arenado. Maybe let's say you're at you're at Dodger Stadium and you happen to catch Cody Bellinger's 1,000th hit that happens to be a long ball out into the stands. And, you know, they're trying to get the ball back and they're like, you know, hey, Paul, what do we do to get that ball from you? What are some of the things that you think you ask for?
I would, if I had that ball, I would ask for a substitute ball signed by Bellinger. And probably if all the Dodgers can sign it, which probably they could, not say the starting nine on the team.
Yeah.
And then, I'd ask for a jersey and a bat.
Yeah, that's
well worth it on the 1,000. That's one third toward the
big milestone.
3,000, the 3,000 hit. You're one third of the way, and that's a big milestone right there.
Yeah, I thought about it, and I would probably ask for a signed ball or two, a jersey as well, and maybe tickets to another game where I could sit like behind home plate or something. You know, nothing too crazy.
And you would get it.
Yeah.
I think you would get it.
Yeah, I think so as well. Yeah. You know, and I mean, it kind of probably depends as well. If it was, you know, let's say a couple years ago, if it was a big shot from like Manny Machado, you know, I probably would just ask for a signed jersey. And again, I'm thinking tickets. I'm thinking you get some really good tickets behind home plate or maybe a meet and greet or something like that.
One free beer as much as they cost.
that actually may be the one thing that they're like, no, we can't do that. That's too expensive. It's too expensive. I can't do that for you. Anything else? You want a private jet to the next game, the away game that we're going to? Because I think we can make that happen.
A hotel to stay in. Yeah.
All expense paid trip. I think that's probably realistic. And I was really kind of surprised, that fan, either, you know, maybe they were just caught off guard or whatever and they didn't know. But I mean, there have been instances, though, where people have caught those balls and they didn't give them back. Like it was like, you know, a big home run, like the, you know, or whatever, and they didn't give the ball back. And I'm like, I mean, come on, like how petty are you that you would catch like a milestone ball? Like that ball is 100% going to be displayed in that person's house, right? And like he's going to put something that's a trophy. He should get that ball back. And
well, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
When we went to the Birmingham Barons baseball game, when I caught all three of those baseballs during that night in one game, I got three baseballs.
Yeah, but let's.
How much do you think those are worth? How much do you think those?
Nothing. Nothing.
Free tickets. At least free ticket.
A foul ball?
I got three balls that night.
Yeah, they tossed you two of them. I mean,
they're worth something, though.
We were worse than
tickets. Come on.
We were worse than the 6-year-olds down there begging them for balls. Like they were in the dugout and the inning was going.
I gave one to the kids.
You
though.
Did.
And I
that
gave
was,
one to the kids.
That was nice.
And
was
one to the nice. Twins, your daughters.
Yeah. No, they both got one. I think they got one. You get.
I left out of the ballpark with none. So
yeah,
I should have got free tickets or something for those three balls.
Definitely. Well, speaking of our Arenado and his contract and everything, I know earlier in the a couple weeks ago we were talking about this, and you were pretty hot and heavy, and I dare say pissed off at the production of some of these guys with the large contracts that were going on. I think your big hangups were Machado and Harper specifically, and you might have touched on Trout a little bit. And I thought it'd be a good time to kind of go back and look at how they're performing now and kind of compare them to each other and as well to kind of their contracts and stuff. I know you said that you had some information that you wanted to go over, so I'm gonna let you take it from first, and then I'll cover what I have.
Well, one of the biggest disappointments I think right now is with Manny Machado.
Okay.
You know, earlier during our podcast on one of our first couple of them, you know, when he was at 23 at bats, he was averaging 217 with one home run and one RBI at 23 at bats. Now, as we stand to this day, he's at 86 at bats. He's got 12 runs. He's got 4 home runs, 9 RBIs, and he's averaging right at the moment 244 with the on-base percentage at 337.
Okay.
That's not too much of a climb for the contract. What, the third highest paid player in MLB right now?
Yeah.
That's not being very productive in getting a return on your money for San Diego right now. So that's my biggest disappointment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny though, because I'm looking at some of the stats, and I might have gotten my stats from a different date than you did. I've got him sitting at 22 games. I didn't do his at bats, so that's not a number I have in front of me. But he had he was a batting average of 253 from 217, which is, to me, that's a fairly significant jump over a small period of time. You know, you're not going to get huge swings or anything like that. The 4 home runs, I will agree, that's a little bit disappointing. He's never really been a huge power you know, hitter or anything like that. But he has put up 0.8 WAR, which over the 5 people that we kind of targeted at the podcast previously, that comes in tied for second. Him and it's actually really, really odd that him and Harper are so closely matched with regards to the wins above replacement that they currently have. Both of them are sitting at 0.8. I'm gonna let you carry on.
Another. Your boy Arenado.
Yeah.
Originally,
to me, that's been very disappointing.
About earlier in the season, at 25 at bats, where he was at 280 with 0 home runs.
Yeah.
That was earlier in the season. You know, and we're looking at 93 at bats. He's only has 4 home runs.
Yeah.
With 14 ribbies, he's averaging 269. So you're looking at Manny Machado and Arenado, you're looking at 8 home runs on a combination of both of those players.
Yeah.
Where's the return on that investment for those teams that they put so much money into those two players?
Yeah.
That's the reason why they invested on those two players. Are they going to come up, you know? Once again, it's a long season. I can see that. But you know what? You need to start picking it up somewhere.
So I got a quick question for you, though.
You're not going to get into the groove. You're not going to get into the groove.
As far as production goes, right, like I'm not talking RBIs or anything like that. How many home runs would you expect for either one of these two guys?
Right now?
No. Not based off now. I'm saying I want your expectation. Like at the beginning of the year, when we're talking everything and seeing how everybody's supposed to be and everybody's all hyped up, how many home runs do you think Machado and/or Arenado should be, you know, targeting
at the beginning? At the beginning of the season?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the season, right? Like I'm saying, at the end of the season, where do you think they should be from a home run standpoint?
Well, I would think at least in the 30s.
Which, I mean, technically they're pretty close to, though, right? They have 4 now. We're looking at about a little over 10% of the season complete. So if they were to maintain this, they're looking at anywhere from 35 to 40 home runs apiece. If they keep up the production that they have right now, which it seems strange, right? But when you're talking 162 games and you're extrapolating it out that far, They're not. It's not too far off that you wouldn't see them approaching the 30 home run mark. Both of them.
Well, will you look at my boy Bellinger?
Oh, well, that's he's at now. Yeah, he's ridiculous. Of the five players that we are looking at, he has the most wins above replacement at this point of the season, and he is on a tear.
He's on an MVP pace. Oh, yeah. He's right at, like, last I looked at 89 at bats. He's already got 11 home runs, 28 RBIs. His average is .416. On base percentage is .490.
Yeah.
So if you look at .490, you're talking almost 50% of the time on getting on base at bat.
Yeah, which is insane.
Whether it be a hit, whether it be a walk, whatever the case may be, that's 50% of being on base.
Yep.
That's unbelievable.
It's fantastic. You know, and it's fun to watch, too. I mean, like, he seems like he's just having fun with baseball right now.
Absolutely. And with Mike Trout, getting off out of the starting gate.
Mm-hmm.
He started off slow.
He did, you know, but he's picked up. Bats,
eh.
He's
yeah,
at 1.9 WAR right now.
He was hurt too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understand, but he got out of the starting gate slow. At 17 at bats, he had 0 home runs, 3 RBI. And, you know, some of the experts were going, you know, what's wrong with Trout, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And now, you know, with him at this point of the season, he has picked it up. He's got 6 home runs, 14 ribbies, and, you know, he's batting .317, and batting .317, in my opinion, is a pretty good average.
It's yeah, that's Hall of Fame status. And I mean, on base percentage, again, for me, I'm showing him when I was looking up the stats, I have him at his on-base percentage a little over 520. So he's, you know, on base against very similar to Cody Bellinger. They're both very, very close, neck and neck with regards to wins above replacement. Both of them are getting on base about every other time that they're at bat. And that is, I mean, that is just insane. Getting that kind of production out of those guys.
Yeah, and I compared it to some of these other players during our original podcast that didn't have all these big contracts. One was a Trey Mancini from the Orioles. At 20 at bats, he was averaging .450.
Yep.
He had 5 ribbies and 2 home runs. And I compared it to where he's at now at looks like 100 at bats. And he's got 6 home runs, which is just 4 more from where we were at the beginning of the season, 14 ribbies, and he still has a great batting average at .340.
Yeah.
There was one more player, Colton Wong, who was a first-round player. Originally, what I have him at, he had 18 at-bats. He was averaging .500.
Yeah,
with 3 home runs. He was on a tear at the beginning of the season with 6 RBIs. And, you know, he's cooled off after 76 at-bats. He's at 4 home runs, 14 RBIs, and just averaging at a cool .276.
Yeah.
But he's still got an OBP on at .417.
Yeah, and the other piece here, another storyline with regards to like stats and everything that I think has been really, really neat. Chris Davis, right? Like he start the season, obviously he went the record. What's that?
No, go ahead.
You know, he had the record for number of at bats without a hit, consecutive at bats without a hit before April 13th, which was the day that he actually broke. The slump that he was in, he was batting zero, like literally a zero batting average to April 13th.
Yes, he was.
A .132 on base because he did walk a couple of times, and then a .132 slugging. But since he broke that record, his stats since he has broke that record have been phenomenal. He's batting .391. He's got an on-base percentage of .417 and a slugging percentage of .783. He may be this season's biggest comeback story of the entire season. Like it is really, really great.
He's got a couple home runs, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's hit a couple of home runs since he busted out of that
scene. Good for him.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really, really great to see. And it's also specifically with the Orioles and such a young ball club, it's really, I think it's good for those guys to see a veteran like him kind of coming out and, you know, struggling at the beginning of the year, but continuing to get in there and put in the work to actually
and to improve. That's right. That's right.
And, you know, and showing what it's like to kind of work through adversity like that as well. So it's definitely like nice
mind
to
game.
See. It is. I mean, it is definitely a big deal. There, you know, yips is for sure a real thing. If you don't know what yips are, go and check out Lester's throws to first base. He cannot throw to first base. He's a starting pitcher, so it's definitely a poor situation to be in. I think he's worked on it a little bit, though. He's gotten a little bit better with his throws. John Lester is his first name.
He can hit, though.
Oh yeah, I mean he's a really good pitcher. It's why he performs so well in the NL. And but yeah, he just can't throw the ball to first. If you've ever seen him, it's the most ridiculous thing you'll ever see. But there was another guy on the Blue Jays recently, Gurriel, I want to say was his last name, who recently just got a similar situation, yips, and he just can't throw it to first base. I don't know what it is, but just gets that ball, goes to sling it over to first base, and he just overthrows it, ends up getting guys going to second base. So it's a pretty big deal. Let's see. Other than that, I don't really have too much else. It's been a slow news week as far as sports is. We had a whole bunch of stuff going on this weekend, so I don't have any other personal stuff either. Do you have anything?
Nah, just one other thing. I just love the blurred shot that he made last night.
You broke up a little bit. What was
it? Damian Lillard.
Uh-huh.
Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
That the shot that he made, and Paul George commented on his post interview with the Oklahoma City Thunder that was a bad shot. Well, when Damian Lillard hit that, I think it was like from 38 feet out,
right,
and made three-pointer, he was waving to Oklahoma City goodbye.
Yeah,
you're out of here.
Yeah,
so for Paul George to say that was a bad shot,
you know, it's
Damian Lillard said that he practices that at practice, so
yeah, so it's yeah,
we'll see where they go from there.
Bad shot or not, he made it. So in the end, it's a bad shot. If you miss it, it's an acceptable shot when you make it. So the other thing I forgot was Tiger Woods got the Masters. It's the first time in something like 14 years that he's won the Masters. I'm not a big Masters guy. It's a huge thing out here in the South. Like, I mean, all of our buddies were watching the Masters and stuff, and you know, I don't get into it. You know, I got only enough brain power to deal with one boring sport with baseball. So I can't pick up on golf too, and try to keep all that stuff in my brain. But yeah, it was pretty impressive that he finally broke all that issues that he was having. Because again, it's been a long time since he's won it. So
yeah, what a great story! I tell you what, I was watching the last four holes of that tournament.
Yeah,
and I was pulling for him all the way, and I was getting goosebumps. on every hole that he was making, and I was cheering him on. It was great.
Yeah, it's definitely a good story. So, all right, well, it's another fantastic podcast that's wrapping up here. Another fun Wednesday evening for myself, and I look forward to talking to you next week, Dad.
I'll be there.
All right, I love you.
All right, love you. All right. Enjoy.